Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. Ryan Walters, the Christian nationalist zealot who runs public education in Oklahoma, is suing the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Yes, not FFRF suing Walters, though that's happening. Walters is suing FFRF. For what? I'll try to figure that out. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is disappearing people and sending them to a foreign prison with no trial, no lawyer, and no evidence of wrongdoing. That is what we're going to get into on the pod today. But first, I want to touch on two things. What I Would Tell Eve by Megan McAuliffe O'Leary. What I Would Tell Eve. Eat the fucking apple. They're going to blame you regardless. You might as well go to the gallows with a full belly, knowing more than God. I love that poem. That is Megan McAuliffe O'Leary, MAEGENMCAULIFFE. That is in her collection of poems, Full Belly Poems by Megan McAuliffe O'Leary, and it is available from thefinishedproject.org. Go support her work. A little poetry on the pod on a morning like this is never a bad thing. And second, I want to follow up on two things since Brad and I did our crossover episode, our activism menu. And the first is that I know a bunch of you volunteered for WISDEMS and for the Wisconsin Supreme Court race here, and we pulled off a huge win last week. Susan Crawford defeated Brad Schimmel, Elon Schimmel, as she said. This was a big middle finger to Elon Musk, who dumped between $20 and $30 million into this race trying to buy it. Schimmel lost by 10 points. Money can't buy happiness or love or Wisconsin, Elon. Sorry, get fucked. Second, I just want to clarify something that Brad and I said when we were talking about our menu. But to do that, I'm going to bring on Mallory McMorrow. You may remember her as the Michigan State Senator. She's actually the youngest woman ever elected to the Michigan State Senate. And she went viral in 2022 for this brilliant speech that she gave that ended, "We will not let hate win." And here she is talking about something that Brad and I talked about. But it's a really important point that she makes, and we have to drive it home.
I've already protested. I've already called my reps. What do I do now? So here's a little tough love. There is no one and done action that is going to fix things. I want you to think about what kind of relationship you want to have with your community, with your state, and with the country. A real relationship. A good relationship is not just you checking in once a year. That's voting. Think about that as voting. That is the bare minimum. That is showing up. That's texting somebody in your life once a year. A real relationship takes work. That is calling regularly.
There is no one and done action. As she says in that video, civic engagement is not an action, it's a relationship. This is something that is ongoing that you have to do time and time again if you want to make a difference. If you expect one phone call to make a difference, remember, it's not going to. We said that, right? We told you it's the collective, the buildup of that, and you can do more and more and more. So just want to drive that point home. Because I also heard from people online, not just that they volunteered to help Wisconsin win, thank you, but also that, hey, I've already done this and I feel like it's not working. Do it again. Do it again. Get in the habit of doing it. That's why I wanted you to store those numbers in your phone so that you could do it every day. So this is the 7th episode of One Nation Indivisible, and I'm trying to get the hang of things. I'm finding it difficult in a couple ways, because mostly the scheduling. Other than last week when I got to do a pod with Liz, which was just truly wonderful, and we're going to have her on, I think, quite a bit, I hope. I'm turning this in 4 or 5 days before it drops, the recording. And the pace of events is crazy, as you all know. It's a real challenge knowing what to cover. I'm trying to give you what you need to know from me. But not everything that I know. And I'm also trying to let the other experts who are out there and who are better situated and better educated on topics to educate you, especially on those topics that I'm not going to cover. So you can get that stuff elsewhere. It is a challenge. And I would love to hear from you about what you think is going right, what could be done better. Please find me on social and let me know. And if you're in the Discord for premium subscribers, just know that we're going to probably do some live hangouts soon. What I used to do with my Patreon folks called Libations and Conversation, where we get together on a Zoom and have a drink and have a chat, and it's a blast. And I want to mention that in particular today because we're going to get into some criminal law today, and I'm not an expert there. We're going to get into some immigration law, and I'm not an expert there. That's okay, because you can get answers to some of those bigger questions elsewhere. But let's dive into the two big topics that we're going to get into today. So the Freedom From Religion Foundation is getting sued by Ryan Walters. And let's listen to what Walters has to say about this.
I've got this lawsuit that I filed today against the Freedom From Religion Foundation. They're a group of radical atheists that continue to attack our students and teachers in the state of Oklahoma? Well, never again. These radical atheists can find somewhere else to go.
So this is like a shaky handheld video, and he holds up the lawsuit, his hands quivering a little bit. And let me start by saying I've not talked to anybody at the Freedom From Religion Foundation about the content of this episode. They are not endorsing anything I'm about to say. I did work for them, of course, as many of you know. They are not a guest on here. They are not really. They don't even know that I'm doing this. But this lawsuit is beyond absurd. And Nick Fish, the president of American Atheists, wrote, "This is an absurd joke of a lawsuit that should be thrown out of court, and every lawyer who had anything to do with the filing ought to be sanctioned by the court and referred to the state bar for discipline." Folks, I have read this lawsuit, and Nick is absolutely right. And we're going to walk through this lawsuit just so you can get a little bit of a taste. I'm not going to do everything. This is not going to be exhaustive, but a little bit of a taste of how bad this is. Any lawsuit is kicked off by a complaint. That's the piece of paper that you file with a court to sue somebody else. You file your complaint. You can back your complaint up with exhibits and things like that if you want. But the complaint is the operative thing that kicks the lawsuit off. And in the complaint, you say what the entity you're suing did wrong, what rules, laws, statutes, regulations they broke, and what relief you get. And of course, you lay out the facts and things like this. Now, it's important to tell a story. And this lawsuit does not mention FFRF on page one. It begins with just these random non sequiturs that appear to have fallen out of Ryan Walters' brain. The first graph is about weaponizing the Establishment Clause, which is one of the clauses in the Constitution that separates church and state according to our court system. The second paragraph is a lengthy quote, several lengthy quotes of Oklahoma law. Maybe. It's hard to tell for sure because the paragraph talks about the Oklahoma statutes. Not statutes. Now, this is This is a common typo, but it doesn't do this just once. It does this twice. S-T-A-T-U-E-S. The Oklahoma statues governing public schools, right? You can envision, you know, this marble statue in front of every school with a gavel or something.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The statues additionally provide... Okay. You know, you might forgive that. Again, it's a common typo, but it gets worse. The third paragraph says that the Bible has secular value. And none of these paragraphs follow from each other. It looks like a ChatGPT copy and vomit. Just total non sequiturs, really poor writing and lawyering. If the judge doesn't know what this lawsuit is about by the end of the first page, you have failed as a lawyer. And this is just vomit. You should know what you are reading about in the first paragraph. And then, out of nowhere, we get to a public school district. And finally, on page two, we get to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, except that it's not. It's not the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It's the Foundation for Freedom From Religion, FFRF. And that is how they define the acronym FFRF for the rest of this. Look, it's not even a complaint, folks. I mean, this is like an essay, it's an article. This is, again, this is like a ChatGPT blog post. So let's just pause for just a second and put aside this poorly written, poorly organized complaint. And I'm going to walk you through what actually happened that has got Ryan Walters to try to sue FFRF. Because you really cannot tell from the complaint. So I did some external research to piece this together. And this is what happened. A parent reached out to the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is normally what happens, right? Somebody in a school district reaches out to FFRF. And this district parent reported, one, that the district implemented a policy that allows teachers to read Bible verses at the beginning of their classes. And this was happening in both Akil Elementary and Akil High School. I apologize if I'm getting that wrong. The parents said that the district had informed students at the beginning of the school year that there would be, quote, optional Bible verse readings in all of their classes. Okay, so for example, the parent's child's history teacher began classes by picking a Bible verse for the day and then asking a student to read that verse to the class. And according to the parent, which is according to the student, these verses had no bearing on the actual subjects being taught. A blatant way to teach public school students the Bible in a devotional way, right? That the Bible, that these verses are true. We're teaching these verses, we're having you read them for the truth contained therein, as opposed to the value to literature. Or that this particular verse had a role in human history because, let's say, we'll take recent history, that the first Trump administration used Romans 13 to separate families at the southern border. Okay. The second thing that the parent reported was that each day, the school day began with a, quote, mandatory student-led prayer over the school's intercom systems, and that this had been going on for years. Apparently, there was a school policy on voluntary private prayer and a moment of silence. But what actually happened was that after the attendance bell during the morning announcements, a student would announce, hey, we're going to have a moment of silence or prayer, and then they would pray aloud over the intercom. Right? So this is not, there's nothing voluntary about it. You can't escape it. It's being imposed on you using the machinery of the state. This is a morning intercom prayer taking place in both district schools that the students cannot skip because it occurs after first period has started. You know, so you're going to be tardy if you arrive after the prayer. So this is, again, not a moment of silence or voluntary prayer. It's the school abusing its power to impose one particular religion on other people's children. This is a gross abuse of power. And the same with forcing children to hear Bible verses. It's an abuse of power. So, FFRF wrote a letter to the school district superintendent. And the letter is hedged. This is a report that's coming in from a parent. May or may not be true. And that's how the letter is written. This may be happening. If it is, we want you to fix it. Please investigate. That's Andrew's summary of the letter. And that's what the superintendent did. The superintendent looks into it, and the superintendent writes back, quote, "We have discussed these concerns, and these issues have been addressed. Through meeting with both building principals, I have made it clear that we want to make sure that no student is coerced into doing any religious activity." That's upholding the Constitution. That is defending. FFRF was defending the religious freedom of every student by preventing the machinery of the state from being used to impose religion on kids. This is by any measure, this is curing constitutional violations. So Ryan Walters is pissed off because the Constitution is being upheld and the religious freedom of every student is being protected and the state is not imposing Christianity on other people's kids. That's what is happening factually in the real world. Now, after the introduction in the complaint, which tells no story and is this slapdash muddle of bullshit, we get to a title reading complaint and then numbered paragraphs, which seems off. And again, the slipshod non sequiturs continue. First, we get a quote from a 2020 Supreme Court case, apparently because the author of this liked the phrase, quote, "trendy disdain for religion," has no place in this. Literally out of left field. And then we get stats saying that Oklahoma is a pretty religious state, which again doesn't matter. The Constitution still applies. Then we get stats about the number of students, and then we get back to the Oklahoma statues, who knows. So we get this sort of shitty repetition from the introduction. And then we get to paragraph 7. So then we get to paragraph 7, and they say that FFRF is fighting for the separation of church and state. But curiously, neither the word separation nor the word church appear anywhere in the text of the U.S. Constitution. By contrast, the Declaration of Independence makes a reference to God, a creator, a supreme judge, and divine providence, thereby solidifying the notion that a complete separation of church and state was never the intention of the nation's founders. Did you hear my eyes roll? I have battled this kind of disinformation for years. The marriage of arrogance to ignorance is always a bit much, but this is breathtaking for a legal complaint before a court of law. It really is astonishing. Now, first, substance-wise, look, the Declaration is cool. I love it. But it is a document of destruction, not creation. It's rhetoric and severance. It cut our political ties with Great Britain and a Christian king who was the head of an established church and the defender of the faith. It did nothing, nothing to establish a nation and form a government. It did say that we the people, not kings or gods, had power, and that was important. But the second point is that the Declaration predates that Constitution by more than a decade. Declaration, 1776, the Constitution was drafted in 1787, ratified in 1789, and then you get to 1791 for the First Amendment, so 10 to 15 years later. To say that the strategic piety in the Declaration of Independence means that the founders didn't intend to separate church and state a decade and a half later is hot trash. It's like citing someone's high school breakup letter, which expresses a preference for blondes, to say that the wedding vows they made to a brunette 15 years later are invalid. It is nonsensical. And third, the God referenced in the Declaration of Independence is not a Christian God anywhere. And the only time the word God is used is for, quote, "the laws of nature and of nature's God." Right? Now, we're not talking about Wiccan religion being trying to impose on children. And I'd still have a problem with that. I think Ryan Walters would, too. And if you want to understand why the rest of that argument and those other invocations of strategic piety in the Declaration of Independence are worthless for the idea that this was founded as a Christian nation, run to your local library and check out The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. I've got a couple chapters on the Declaration and one on each of those references in that book. And this really is pure Christian nationalism. This is regurgitated talking points. I would not be surprised if this was copied and pasted from some ranting email that Ryan Walters sent to this attorney demanding that they make this asinine claim in a legal filing. Now, after that historical disinformation, they had turned to attacking FFRF. Graph 8 talks about how much good FFRF does stopping these constitutional violations in Oklahoma, but it frames it in the opposite way. And then they cite this 30-year-old op-ed from FFRF's in-house newspaper, which they clearly found by searching for the word Oklahoma on the FFRF website. And you know that because they mention in the footnote that there are this many pages of Oklahoma stuff on the FFRF site, which doesn't, okay, your state needs help. The complaint is pissed off that 30 years ago, FFRF, quote, had the audacity to paint Oklahoma City's response to the 1996 bombing of the federal building as an opportunity for greedy politicians to have a media opportunity through televised prayer and services. The author literally paints the state's and indeed the nation's response to its grief as da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, there are lots of quotes and brackets in there. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 quoted phrases, several brackets footnoted. And this is actually quoting an editorial that Joanne Bell wrote. And Joanne Bell was a federal plaintiff in an Oklahoma school prayer case, Bell versus Little Axe. She was, at the time, the executive director of the ACLU of Oklahoma. I don't know what she is up to now. She is an active member of Americans United and of FFRF. And what she wrote was that this bombing has been used by all the greedy politicians to promote their give them the death penalty agenda. So she wrote that greedy politicians were using this to promote the death penalty, not as a media opportunity. And actually, four paragraphs later, the greedy politicians line comes up, even though they're sandwiched together in this complaint as though they are the same thing, which is a little bit misleading for a court, and I would be very hesitant to do that. And then she wrote, going to the Civic Center in downtown Oklahoma City on business the day after the bombing, I was met at the door by a U.S. congressman screening individuals who wished to enter the building, and I felt like it was a media opportunity for him. That's a reasonable point to make. Was she angry that politicians and preachers use the tragedy to push their agenda? Yes. Why not? Quote, I try to keep telling myself these people mean well. Their intentions are good. Da 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 da. But I'm angry. Angry at the unnecessary death and destruction. Angry that hate is being spewed from every pulpit on Sunday morning. Angry about intolerance being taught. Angry that just because one doesn't subscribe to the majority beliefs that one is wrong. Angry that I have but one voice to speak out for a reason. It has been said that we will never be the same here in Oklahoma. I hope not. My hope is that we will all look at each other with kindness and tolerance each day, that we greet each new morning with the knowledge that we can change and make this world a better place. Now, I wanted to quote that in full because it is a gross mischaracterization bordering on a lie to the court, the way that this complaint has framed that op-ed. Never mind the fact that it doesn't matter at all. This is 30 years ago, and who cares what one organization says about this thing that happened, right? This is fear-mongering. It's an attempt to paint FFRF in a poor light to bias the court. And the FFRF looks like they have drawn a Trump judge here, which we won't get into that on this pod today, but maybe at a later time. The next paragraph, paragraph 9, pitches this as David versus Goliath and quotes the Bible with, you guessed it, FFRF is Goliath. My favorite line, Freedom From Religion Foundation is allegedly a nonprofit tax-exempt organization in the state of Wisconsin. Allegedly. I love it. You know, if it were only that, I would tip my hat to this attorney, but it's so bad. Like, of all the places to do allegedly, like, that is a thing you can very clearly check out and know is a fact. Like, that is probably like the most clear fact in this, and you chose to use allegedly there. Unbelievable. When discussing FFRF's mission and motives, they wrote, quote, as an example of their principal beliefs. And then they quote one FFRF member to say, quote, some members state that the separation of church and state is important, but so is refuting Christianity itself. Again, this is just trying to make FFRF look bad before whatever judge they're going to pull. So throughout, it's fear-mongering. It's fear-mongering, and it might work on some judges. Now, throughout this complaint, you can tell that there are copy and paste errors. that this really is a pastiche. The fonts are slightly different colors in some place. Paragraph 27 ends with an incomplete sentence, quote, as the Supreme Court has long recognized, comma, and then just nothing. Clearly there was supposed to be another quote. My guess is that it was that first paragraph that I mentioned about the hostility to religion was supposed to be there, and somebody was like, that's so good, we got to move it up. Anyway, there are random, untethered assertions about chaplains that relate back to nothing substantive. It's almost like they were thinking about maybe including that in the lawsuit, right? Then they, who knows what happened? They, again, the wrong name for FFRF, statues, not statutes. In paragraphs 29 and 30, they admit that FFRF's letter was accurate. And this to me is just amazing. What I'm saying is that the letter FFRF sent to the school districts was admitted to be accurate in paragraphs 29 and 30. So basically, they admit that these school districts are violating the Constitution, which means that whatever FFRF did was curing those violations. And let's get into the end of the complaint, because the end of a complaint is important. It is arguably the most important thing. You often read complaints backwards. And the end of a complaint has two sections. We'll leave out the signatures and stuff, though those are important. You want to know who's filing this. And I'm not going to get into this particular attorney on this one. The end of a complaint has two sections. It has your counts and the prayer or request for beliefs. And the counts are numbered. Count one, count two, count three. And they list the provisions of the law that have been violated. So, for instance, in the Ten Commandments lawsuit against Louisiana, brought by Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and FFRF and ACLU, count one reads like this. Count one, violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. Count two reads, violation of the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. What we're saying is that these actions also violate the Free Exercise Clause. And then it has the request for relief. The plaintiffs respectfully request the following relief. An order declaring HB 71, that's the law, that the Ten Commandments law in Louisiana, to be in violation of the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause. We want declaratory relief. You declare that this law violates those count one and count two. We want, quote, an order preliminarily and thereafter permanently enjoining the defendants, all the way down, right? We want you to stop them from doing what they're doing. And then it goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G, right? And G is such other relief as the court deems just and proper, right? And so you lay out your relief and how your relief actually relates to those counts when you're talking about declaratory relief. But this lawsuit against FFRF is so bad, so poorly written, so recklessly lawyered, so fucking frivolous that they don't actually allege any violations of the law. I had to reread this. I could not believe it. The counts do not cite a law and suggest that FFRF violated it. Count one says the court can grant declaratory relief, which is true, but declaratory relief about what? What is the court going to declare? Nothing, because you haven't said that anything violated the law, and you've also admitted that FFRF's letter was right. It's not a count. That's relief. That goes in the relief section. Count two is about injunctive relief. It's the same problem. What do you want to enjoin? What do you want to stop? Injunctions stop things. Enjoin stops things. What are you trying to stop? Nobody knows, because that's a relief. It's not a count. You've not actually alleged any violation of the law that could be enjoined. Folks, this is literally nothing. It's literally nothing. It's like taking out a mortgage for $0. It's a lot of paperwork and hassle and time and effort that says and does nothing. Honestly, this is actually as if Ryan Walters wrote a terrible op-ed regurgitating Christian nationalist talking points that nobody would publish anywhere, so he forced his lawyer to sue at gunpoint. That is how awful and frivolous and pointless this is. I don't know how else this can be explained. This is one of the worst pieces of lawyering I have ever seen. It's not law. It's disinformation mixed with opinion and filed as a lawsuit. Again, it's unfit for a blog or even something like 4chan. It is, and this is a legal term of art here, so pay attention, please, complete and total bullshit. Now, I want to shift gears to something a little more serious, though that could get serious for FFRF, because with the way our courts are, as you're about to see, who knows. I haven't covered Trump invoking the Alien Act, which is a wartime act that has no business being used right now. I haven't had a chance to get in to what happens to Khalil at Columbia. And there is so much that has happened in this arena. For instance, here's Dahlia Lithwick and Mark Joseph Stern's story at Slate on some of this a couple weeks ago. Immigrant authorities deported Rasha Alawea, a kidney transplant specialist at Brown University, despite a judge's Friday order halting her removal. Second, authorities deported 250 Venezuelan migrants, flouting another judge's explicit directive to turn around American planes that hadn't yet landed in El Salvador, where migrants were being sent. That was at the beginning of this crisis, right? This is, again, folks are talking about the constitutional crisis, which I think is underselling the term. We're talking about just complete subversion of the Constitution at this point. The crisis was packing the court and letting them pardon Trump effectively. The crisis was packing the court and not doing anything about it. But now we see the authorities deliberately ignoring court orders. We're talking about force over the rule of law. And I do want to talk about these flights to El Salvador and what is happening. And it's wrong to talk about these as arrests. I was careful in the intro not to do that. These are something different. Kidnappings, renditions, disappearing people. And I think you should be worried about these flights to El Salvador, not because we're deporting violent gang members, which is what the Trump administration is saying, but because we are deporting people with no evidence that they are violent gang members other than Donald Trump's word or his lackeys, right? That's it. Trump says they're violent gang members and they get deported. That is unbridled power, and it is going to be turned against all of us. It's going to be turned against you. It's going to be turned against anybody who's not the staunchest Trump supporter, and even some of them. It will happen. That is the lesson of the poem, First They Came For. It will happen if we don't stop it now. Let's just look at a couple briefly. Abrego Garcia is married to an American woman, and he's father to an American child, a 5-year-old with a disability. 15 years ago, he fled gangs in his home country, and at 16 years old, he came to the U.S. legally for a better life. He did everything you're supposed to do. In 2019, a U.S. court gave him a lesser form of asylum known as a withholding of removal because he'd be targeted by gangs if he returned home. So the withholding of removal means he couldn't be deported. Abrego picked up his son on March 12th after work. ICE pulled him over, and again, arrested here is the wrong word because he did nothing wrong and was suspected of no crime and was under the withholding of removal protection. ICE abducted Abrego Garcia from Maryland, then sent him to Texas, and then onto that now infamous prison in El Salvador. And what we've since found out is, quote, this is from one of the legal filings. On March 15th, although ICE was aware of his protection from removal to El Salvador, Abrego Garcia was removed to El Salvador because of an administrative error. That isn't something that the DOJ, the Department of Justice, filed with the court in that case. What does that mean? It means that the Trump administration admits to making a mistake. It means they fucked up. It cites a declaration from an ICE acting field office director, which says, quote, through administrative error, Abrego Garcia was removed from the United States to El Salvador. This was an oversight, and the removal was carried out in good faith based on the existence of a final order of removal and Abrego Garcia's purported membership in MS-13. They fucked up, but we thought he was a gang member. Now, it's true that Abrego Garcia has been accused of gang affiliation, has been accused, but never has any evidence ever been presented here or in previous immigration proceedings to show this. And the withholding of removal order was in place because if he returned to his country, he was likely to be the victim of gang violence, his family having suffered at the hands of previous extortion attempts at gangs previously. That was terribly said. His family having suffered previous extortion attempts back home. The Trump administration fucked up at best. Really, this could be incompetence or cruelty. They don't care. This is a brown person. Get him out of here. And this is a simple, basic reason to have some damn due process, to make sure We get the right people. This is not the first time. This is not the last time that this is screw up like this is going to happen. And again, when you have the I don't care attitude, get them out of here, that the Trump administration has, it's going to happen a lot more often. Right? These are not the kind of quietly competent public servants whose service you only miss when it's gone. These are incompetent ideologues or scared go-alongs that are absolutely going to make more mistakes. And because the goal below the surface is a white Christian nation, they're going to sleep just fine at night knowing that they shipped a brown man abroad to a country where we know he's more likely than not going to face violence and persecution. It's not just that the cruelty is the point. A white Christian America is the point. Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.